Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com. A
shame. Think something new under sun. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Imprint Companion. This is a show all about Australia's number one brand new Blu-ray boutique label. Imprint Films, part of Via Vision Entertainment. Every batch, my beautiful friend and I, Alexi Toliopoulos, who you can hear here. Say hello, Alexi.
Hello, Alexi.
We usually gush, unpack, unravel and unwrap all of the special features and the brand new releases in every batch that Imprint Films has brought out since the beginning up and to date now. However, today is a very special episode. Today, it is not just Alexi and I gushing over many films. We're going to focus a special episode. One film will be covered. One of the brand new releases. In fact, it is Spine Label 66.
Wow.
Sexy 66. Very kind of spooky number. For the number one fan, the only way that this release could have been better is if this person had done a commentary track on it. Ladies and gentlemen, and fans of Imprint, Companion, and Serious Disc Agreement, please welcome the wonderful, prodigious author, screenwriter, film curator at Australia's National Museum, and person who does not like compliments, Maria Lewis. Welcome to Imprint Companion.
Hello, Nick. It's the only intro. It's the only intro. The seminal moment from Double Jeopardy. When she tilts her head, she's in that Armani size 4, and she looks him dead in his fucking lying eyes and goes, "Hello, Nick." Oh, every time.
You know what, kiddo? I don't think I want you to grow up. Who's gonna go sailing with me then?
In every love.
If you like it, it's yours.
If I like it. Mm-hmm.
There is a moment.
We should do this more often. Go away, just the two of us, with nobody else around.
Never to be forgotten.
Nick? Put the knife down, ma'am, and step away!
I don't know where my husband is!
Nick bought life insurance policies.
Nick wanted to make sure that we'd be okay.
There's a big difference between okay and $2 million. The jury may see it as a motive.
I didn't kill my husband.
Libby Parsons is in prison for a crime she didn't commit.
I'd like you to adopt my son. Money won't be a problem.
It isn't about money. Thank you.
Now the only way back to her son is to find out what really happened.
Hi, Mommy.
Hello, sweetie pie.
Daddy.
Nick?
You ever hear something called double jeopardy? The state says you already killed your husband. They can't convict you of it a second time. That means that when you leave here, you can kill him. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. It makes you feel warm and tingly all over, don't it?
Paramount Pictures presents...
Who's this?
That's somebody I'm looking for.
Pretty girl?
Oh, yeah, she's very pretty for a convicted murderer.
What are you looking for?
A friend I haven't seen for a couple years.
And you died in the accident.
Poor Simon. I've never seen anyone so grief-stricken.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's over, Libby.
You cannot know what it is like to sit in prison and think of nothing else in the world but your son. Did I make the right choice? I didn't have a choice.
You ever arrest anybody you thought was innocent, but you can't prove it?
she is in New Orleans. She does have a gun. She is looking for you.
She believes that I'm her husband, whom she killed.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Nick.
I learned a few things in prison. I could shoot you in the middle of Mardi Gras, and they can't touch me.
Double Jeopardy.
Where's my son?
Maria, I'm so excited to talk to you about this movie. This version of it, this beautiful new Blu-ray disc, is the first time I've ever seen Double Jeopardy.
Which in part like makes me want to throw up, but then at the same time, I'm also like, how cool and how exciting and what an amazing opportunity to be able to watch what is, for me, like the penultimate moment for 90s thrillers. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, like there was that era of 90s thriller is some of my favorite. Kind of like it really kicks off with the John Grisham shit. And not shit, like I love Pelican Brief. That score is completely out of pocket and like really needs a rework. But like that era of
how dare you? It's like,
yeah.
On well, behalf I of mean, one of Pakula's guys, how dare you?
He can do the fucking score. It's not his fault. It's James Horner, I think, who's like bah, 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 every time. It's so hectic. But like it has all those essential elements, right? Female protagonists usually need an older supporting character and some kind of injustice or conspiracy that needs to be solved. And Ashley Judd was in a bunch of these. I mean, she was also in Kiss the Girls with Morgan Freeman, but they also reteamed a few years after Double Jeopardy for Higher Crimes, which is also excellent. Not as good as Double Jeopardy, though. Double Jeopardy was that girl. And it's so funny because it was like, you know, it had a pretty hefty budget, which 70 mil, like that's significant, especially for 99, right? Especially when you think about the movie, like what are the special effects? You're just like throwing a few cars off a ferry or whatever. So it's mainly like car
they
salary.
Could have thrown for $1 million, 100 cars off that ferry. Mm. Like the cars were also trash cars. Like that's he was driving a shitty car.
When you think about it, right, the reset for that shot, that's like that's fucking taken. You fuck that shot up, you've got to reset that. We're going again tomorrow. It's like you've
and
got
they had to Blake, you forget they had to buy a couple of Kandinskys for this project as well.
Hey, absolutely,
they don't come cheap.
Now before we keep diving, I just want to quickly talk about the transfer. Now this is Bruce Beresford's transfer. You might look at this and say, oh, is this transfer good? I just want to assure you that across every version of this film, it is an intentionally, especially the beginning, sunny, washed out film. So if you start watching the beginning, it is a 1080p full digital scan, like it's a great new HD transfer. However, it might look like it's washed out until you actually see the turn of the film. When the revelations start a turning, you actually get to see the really crisp cinematography and get to relish in the HD print. But if you just when I was starting out, I actually called Maria in the middle of this watch. It's actually so rare for me not to be watching this movie with her. So it was actually a strange experience for me. First time without Maria in like 5 years to watch Double Jeopardy. But I remember saying like, I'm like, oh, this is there is a very clear stylistic intent with this movie. And so that was just something that immediately leapt off the screen at me. And it does also have, really quickly before we get back to everything, the making of Double Jeopardy doco is one of the pure like 90s trashy, ridiculous, dumb voiceover things that you've seen 100 times on telly. Like
in a world where
all that in a world starring Ashley Judd and gets everyone.
Australian director Bruce Beresford made his mission to make this film on $70 million budget. Like that kind of proper Showtime. Love them.
From driving Miss Daisy to driving Miss Crazy off a ferry.
Whoa. Oh my God.
Prophetic.
That's amazing.
Prophetic.
That was amazing.
But so for this movie, in case you haven't seen it, which is kind of crazy, I will just give you the immediate sort of synopsis, which is Ashley Judd's character is married to Bruce Greenwood's character. They are together. They're happily living their life. Their children are there. They're fundraising. They're kind of, it's like a yuppie wet dream at the beginning of this movie. They go out into a lake and go sailing. They have a really sensational sex scene with Ashley Judd's incredible back featured in it, which I can highly recommend. And then what happens is she wakes up and it is a crime scene. Her husband has disappeared.
How often is post-sex? Post-sex.
The boat is covered in blood. She finds a murder weapon. It is her husband's blood, and he goes missing. And she immediately is basically the number one suspect, obviously, and then is eventually incarcerated. While she's in prison, calling to find out what's happening with her son, she hears with her former son's nanny and her son that her husband is in fact there and he is alive. It has been an elaborate ruse. And she gets coached by one of her fellow inmates that, you know what? You know, it's a great thing in the United States Constitution. It is called double jeopardy, which means that you cannot get charged for the same crime twice. So what you can do in any state of this country is leave this prison, go hunt him down and kill him in the street when you find him, and the cops cannot touch you. And that motivates her in like what is, I mean, one of the most radically economical and entertaining pulpy movies, I think, that is out there. And from the 90s, like, I'm just shocked, Lex. I'm not sure if this was your experience. I know I've talked to Maria about it before, but like the economy of every scene is like, what is the minimum amount of information that we need to say and then have our actors convey to keep this thing just moving at a blistering pace? And it just does that from go to woe. Such a fun watch.
Yeah, I would agree to that as well. I would say that part of the charm of this film, and I do think Bruce Beresford is a great director, but this really impressed me from him because it's so out of what I know Bruce Beresford's comfort zone to be. Like, I know him as a maker of epics and prestige films. I hadn't really seen this side of him, to the best of my recollection at least, of like a kind of pulpy, exciting, vintage 90s thriller. And I think it's a lot of beautiful visual storytelling as well. Like, so much of this story is told visually in that kind of Hitchcockian manner, which adds to like that economical nature of this thriller. And that's what I found so exciting.
Yeah, I want to use a word that you use a lot, which I love, which is like grubby. This movie's grubbier than the stuff that he usually does. And so like you don't usually associate him with that, because, you know, if we're just talking about some of his last films, you've got like Ladies in Black, Mr. Church, you know, Mao's Last Dancer, you know, all these kind of prestige-y things. But, you know, I really dig this grubby little movie that he made kind of in the middle of his resume, which is really, really great.
Makes me happy to see a guy like him sink down to a grubs level and muck around in the mud for a little bit.
Well, what it is, like, when you say grubby, for people who haven't seen the film, they probably think it's like an exploitation movie or schlocky or something like that. But what I'm interpreting what you mean by grubby is that kind of midday movie plot line, like a betrayed spouse going on a mission, right? Like a very simple bare bones revenge story. And like David and Doug, the writing duo who did this, also did The Rock, like from 3 years earlier, which is my favorite Michael Bay movie, coincidentally. It's like, but this for me is the best thing that they've done. But it's like, this is what happens when you have like let's say B grade sort of plot, like in its bare bones, right? And then an A grade auteur filmmaker and combine them together. Like, I was watching Sicario. I just watched Sicario 3 times in a day the other day. Like, apparently it meant to be. So I was just like, all right, like, let's have a breakdown and watch Sicario 3 times.
God,
but
thank God, Are You Okay Day is around this time of year.
It was literally on Are You Okay Day. I'm like, the answer is no. But as I was watching it, I was like, trying to think about the reasons why I'm so obsessed with that movie. And like, obviously Tyler Sheridan, I think, is a really great storyteller. But for me, it feels so much like the modern Silence of the Lambs. Like, Sicario is that in terms of like this female character gets put into this world of men and like kind of over the headness of it all, right? But at its bare bones as well, that's like a pretty schlocky B-grade story that gets elevated by Denis Villeneuve's filmmaking and the way that he views the world and the score and the amazing cinematography and blah, blah, blah. And there are so many beautiful shots in this, like where their yuppie lake house, to steal Blake's terminology, is like, just the way that it's shot is so stunning. And then the contrast of that when she's in prison and her mate's like, it's just sheer hate power in you, girl. And I'm like, yes. But when they move out of that and it's like the transition to New Orleans and just the way, like the locations that are chosen, the way things are shot, the mum, oh my God, it's like one of the best bits. Ashley Judd's mum, who just like has like a fucking buried lunchbox full of cash. And she's like, go get him, honey. And
there's always money in tomatoes, Maria. There's always money in tomatoes.
straight up. There isn't now, but back then, maybe not. But it's just like it, that we mentioned that 70 mil budget before. And also like when Blake was watching it, you called me and you're like, I was really surprised like how little Tommy Lee Jones is in it. Like he really doesn't come into the film.
It's much later. Yeah,
like halfway through. And it is like the definition of supporting role. Like it's not a, like a fugitive scenario where he's like, I don't kill my wife. He's like, I don't care. It's like fully Ashley Judd. And then, you know, Bruce and Tommy are like the supporting characters. But that 70 mil budget ended up making like nearly 180 mil. So it's like pretty good returns. But in terms of how it translated as like a cultural moment, it sounds so random, but the like the Blockbuster and MTV Movie Awards nominated this movie for a bunch of shit. And it was like, which is so wild because like Bruce Greenwood was nominated for like best male and at MTV and like Tommy Lee Jones. And you're like, okay, well, it's Tommy off the back of Batman and Fugitive and shit. So he's a movie star. But it's also like, this is such a weird movie for like, you know, 16, 17, 18 year olds to be like, yes, gas it up, especially in 1999, which was a really like significant movie year up against the Matrix and shit. Yeah. And they're like, yes, Double Jeopardy, go. Go
I think off. It speaks to like that changing of the guard that we have in this year where it's like, the turn of the millennium, we're seeing lots of great movies that are like the next big step for some of the biggest filmmakers of all time. But then also we're seeing like the tail end of this kind of fantastic pulpy thriller movement that really has a bit of a pinnacle with Silence of the Lambs being like the biggest prestige entry in that. But then significant entries like The Fugitive and
Seven.
Like you're saying, the John Grisham movie, Seven, like so Pelican much of that Brief. Pulpy thriller genre
Bone
really
collect-
took
Bone
off.
Bone Collector.
Oh, Bone Collector. That's one I saw for the first time this year too.
Yeah. Like there's a whole bunch of like genuine auteurs, like Jonathan Demme, auteur to shit, you know, taking on Silence of the Lambs, where you see when other people come into that world of Hannibal, the cannibal, they don't make like the Brett Ratner Red Dragon. Like it is, it leans so hard into the pulpy stuff where it's like, this is really dependent on who's telling the story and how they're able to position it.
I think as well, what it kind of leads to is a film like this being such a genuine pulpy entry into that, but with having a significant female perspective as well. Like this really read to me as like The Fugitive, but make it for the miso to enjoy. And I think that's like the greatest appeal of this movie is like it has such a strong female perspective, but it does not at all soften this movie that a lot of people I feel would come to that preconceived notion that maybe it goes soft. This movie goes fucking so hard. It bangs harder than The Fugitive. It bangs harder than freaking half those movies we just listed.
No, but it's so funny you say that. It's like His and Hers, The Fugitive, and Double Jeopardy's The Hers. And in The Fugitive, he's like, I didn't kill my wife. And in Double Jeopardy, she's like, I'll fucking kill this guy in the street. Like, I'll
shoot him. I didn't kill him, but I literally am going to now. But it's so funny that you make The Fugitive connection, like, because Tommy Lee as well. But The Fugitive and Double Jeopardy would be on my list of like films that I just watch constantly, like constantly. I probably watch Double Jeopardy about once a month. Like I'm not being facetious. Like I know every line of dialogue. It was one of the first movies I taped off TV and had on a little VHS tape, and I'd drawn like a little knife and texture on the label.
Oh my Lord. So you don't just know all the dialogue, you know all the ads that used to play in between those.
Oh my God. No, I was good. I got all the ads out. Wow. So it was like record, stop. Full theatrical experience, you know what I mean? How's that conversion? But it's just like, it just holds up like a motherfucker. Like we're only past the 20th anniversary. Does that sound right? How many years are we in? Yeah, 20th anniversary a few years ago. And I had written a post about Double Jeopardy and why it's important and why it's sort of like found this additional life in a world where you could still make money off DVD sales. And that was still something that was significant and could happen. It found this additional life through being a really enjoyable sleepover movie, or like a movie that mums watch with their daughters, or like sisters watch together. It was like
mums like, see your dad? Yeah. I'm going to kill him in the street. So I see him.
If you have a nuclear family, but for a lot of people, it was just that connective tissue movie. And Ashley Judd played those types of roles and represented those types of roles so well. She has a, I kind of like always talk about Keisha Castle Hughes as having the same quality too, where they have a real quantifiable strength at the same time as having emotional vulnerability. Wow. And it's really hard to have those two things at the same time, because like you have a Michelle Rodriguez, but you don't get to see her vulnerability. It's like, it's quantifiable strength all the time until maybe something like Widows and people are like, oh shit. Or it's like all vulnerability all the time. But to have that balance where you're believing that this woman will kill this guy, but at the same time really feeling for her and everything she's going through, and the fucking, the Angie, the goddamn nanny slash friend who's off with the husband and then gets murdered, and then the son, and then the and like you feel her pain. But at the same time, I'm like, man, I don't know if I have the gumption to do what she did. You know, like when she's doing one of my favorite bits, where she has the weight pressed to her chest and she's doing fucking this, like the reverse sit-ups. I don't know if you've ever done those before. They are so hard. And the strength that that takes, and how that, like you mentioned her back before, Blake, in a super creepy little monologue.
Outstanding.
But back. Like, that's how you get those muscles, is by doing the reverse sit-up. It's fucking crazy.
Maria, thank you so much for even suggesting that I may have tried one of those those sit-ups with a weight pressed against my chest. That means a lot to me, and that's why you're dear and true friends.
Well, you know what? Equal opportunity weights are. That's me. They are, like, can I just say, they are the, like, they look sick when you're doing them, and the results are amazing. But the actual process of getting into the, because you have to hook, like, your calves under, like, a weight to be able to, like, level yourself out. It is the most humiliating and embarrassing weird little like worm wiggle to do a fucking exercise, that just because Ashley Judd did it. It's literally the only thing I've ever done it.
I think one of the things that you really got to the core of why this movie works and why it was such a thrilling first watch is the escalation and building of not just tension, but the building of stakes getting higher and higher and the circumstances getting more dangerous. It works phenomenally in this movie, and it's all on the beautifully sculpted back of Ashley Judd's performance.
And it's so patient. That's the thing that really like gets me, is it's such like, when she first gets out of prison and she makes the choice to go and break her parole, like straight away, right? We're quite far into the movie by that point. And all that's happened is, well, not all that's happened, like, okay, her husband maybe gets murdered or disappears. She realizes that's a lie and gets out of prison. So you, but she hasn't started on the journey yet. And so by the point she's actually tracking this cunt down, it's like really quite deep into it. And the fact that they, like, I really am obsessed and deeply enjoy process movies. I like being shown the step from A to B to C. It's why, you know, we love all the presidents, Spotlight, things like that, Collective, one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. But when they show you that process of like going through it and taking the viewer with them in a way that's really generous and like quite all-encompassing, that's what I really dig. And like when she goes to the school and she's like moving from one thing to one thing, and even the bit where she tricks the guy into helping her, and then she's like, I just got out of prison, and he's like, for what?
Murder.
Like, oh, I hope wouldn't still go home with it. You'd be like, let's just like give it a crack, you know.
Let's roll the dice. No, I want to tag on one thing that you just said there, which is, but the movie also does something that's great, which is it's not afraid to show her having setbacks. And I think her vulnerability is so different, because I hate character imperviousness. I really want to see characters like toil. And there's that great moment where she's like, she's so fit, she runs away from those cops, but they catch her in the sand dunes, because obviously they're driving a car, right? She can't outrun a car. Like, she's not the Terminator. She's not like Robert Patrick from Terminator 2. And, you know, what's amazing is that she has a setback, but she's got this like determination that you're like, she's going to get through it. Like, she's going to get out of this. She's going to figure out a way out of this. I think that's also what's really special about the movie, is that it has a way of like seemingly never losing a single ounce of pace, but actually legitimately shows cool setbacks, and then you have to watch her sort of bite down and knuckle down and be like, all right, I'm going to get through this. And she does, like, especially when Tommy Lee Jones goes, has the coffee, and she's like, hijacks his car, like, you know, starts like breaking out of her handcuffs and all those cool things that are like, she toughs it out to get through it. It's admirable, like the whole way through.
And like plot wise, right? You know, this, the whole premise of this film, the name and the premise is based on a very specific sort of legal loophole. Mm. And like, realistically, why would she be able to, like, she's super fit, that's one thing, but to be able to run away from a car like Robert Patrick, like, that doesn't make sense. Why would she be able to? This isn't haywire. She's not a trained fucking spy. You see the things that she's picked up in prison. This is why prison's a fucking joke. And it, like, what rehabilitation? You just learn how to be better at the illegal shit you're doing anyway. But she picks up skills in there and learns things and evolves and sets out her plan. But she's not a spy. She's not a CIA agent. She's not like a formal mixed martial artist. She's just really determined and learning things as quickly as she can to achieve what is like a very personal mission to her.
As I said, Lex, right from the top, the only way that this release would be better is if this amazing woman was on the commentary track. But we have gifted you this, folks, of the Imprint Companion. You can turn Maria Lewis on, and you're going to get about 30 minutes of what would have been an outstanding commentary track. You can go back and follow her and find, I'm sure she'll share with us again, her piece that she did for the 20th anniversary.
Mm.
Maria, you're the best. Thank you so much for coming on the Imprint Companion. Do you want to plug the living daylights out of yourself? Because we are just so grateful for your wisdom and your expertise on this film, as you are the number one fan of this movie.
Number one, baby. I was going to plug some film programs I've got coming up at Acme, but we're shut right now and fuck knows when we'll open. But if you like Australian neo-noir films, I've programmed a season called Year Noir, where we're playing a bunch of flicks, including The Hunter, Red Hill, Goldstone, The Square, including interviews with the filmmakers and people involved in those movies, like Willem Dafoe, who is so fucking nice, as well as a season called Yeah, the Girls, which is looking at Australian perspectives on the traditional Hollywood rom-com. Ellie and Abby and Ellie's Dead Aunt is playing as part of that, which was a really great, gorgeous, queer little rom-com that came out sort of in the middle of the pandemic last year. So if you missed a chance to see it on the big screen, this is it, as well as Legally Blonde, which we're playing with Tiziana Boverini, which is filmed at my like local supermarket. So every time I like go in there, I'm always thinking of Tiziana Boverini and all the fucking beautiful numbers and shit. And there are always people in there who straight up look like they're in Tiziana Boverini. And my eighth book, Her Fierce Creatures, comes out in March 2022. If that's something you want to grab, I was like, is that right? And listen to Josie and the Podcats, which is a little limited audio doco that Blake and I did. And you can find me on social media. Just look up my name. That's about it.
The best. And for folks who have followed Alexi and I onto Screen Drafts, you will notice that Maria has indeed programmed the number one film in the 21st century Australia, according to the two GMs at that on that show, which is Alexi and I. Goldstone, big fan, and wish that this thing freaking ends so that I can go to the cinema and watch Goldstone again. Yeah. Lex, where can people find your good self when we are not talking about the physical media?
You can head on over to Total Reboot, the podcast I do with Cameron James. We are currently doing a big mini-series all about the icons of the theme of man versus machine. We have kicked things off with The Terminator with special guest Mr. Sunday Movies. We're doing 2001 A Space Odyssey and RoboCop, amongst many other great icons only with this mini-series we've decided. Icons only.
Can I lift the veil for one moment? I sent Lexia like a bunch of voice memos, as is my preferred mode of communication. Always voice
and,
memos. Off
and goal. Never two. Always eight. And
can I also say the other thing? Now that it's just the three of us in here, they always begin with, so I just send a voice memo instead because, you know, I got fat fingers, can't be bothered typing. Every single time, they always begin with the same thing.
Because I always like, now that you've said that, I will stop doing that. But I truly, like, every time I send them, I'm like, they're a nice little friendship podcast for mates. But it's also been truly the best way to stay in touch with people in different time zones, because you don't know if that person's up or whatever, and then you can just send it fuck off and then there's a new message for you. But I sent Lexi some voice memos the other day, and he goes, Oh, I was about to send you one back, but I'm watching Space Odyssey and the apes just went nuts.
I was about to reply, and then it's like the apes start screaming at each other, go, oh, maybe I'll wait and just do it later.
It would have been such a good voice memo if you're like, hey, blah, 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 and in the background it's just like, wee, wee, wee.
Hi, this is Blake Howard, host and producer of One Heat Minute Productions podcast. We dive into the great and underappreciated cinematic works, often 1 minute or one scene at a time. Our crew of guests are some of the most wonderful filmmakers, writers, authors, and critics ever assembled. Our shows include One Heat Minute, Josie and the Podcats, All the President's Minutes, Increment Vice, and right now, Zodiac Chronicle. Check out oneheatminute.com or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.